Welcome to 101 Salvations today, a new stories series we're starting. 6 months from now, we want to come back because we're going to do that same quiz with the same dogs, okay? That would be interesting, wouldn't it? We actually tried to do this with cats first, but they tried to scratch everybody's eyeballs out, so we didn't. Just kidding. No, we didn't do that. Yeah, this is fun stuff. The reason we did that is because of the whole brain thing, but also we just wanted to activate the right side of your brain because we're going to go into some left brain stuff right now. And I've never heard so many oohs and ahs during a church service. Like I was up here in the front, I could just hear, God is dog spelled backward, right? And we're going to talk about God today, and that was good stuff. The point today is I'm going to prove to you beyond a shadow of a doubt that God created baseball. I'm going to show you this. This is what it has. The whole Bible starts. It says it right here. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Prove right there. The Hebrew word for beginning is diamond. It means diamond. Totally making that up. It's an old joke, and it's not very funny, is it? But I just wanted to remind ourselves, spring is coming because baseball starts this week. Anybody with me on that? Baseball's amazing because it is the only truly perfect sport. It's just amazing. If you look at it dimensionally, it has such precision to it, the right lengths on everything as far as base paths and pitchers' mounds and everything, and it just has such precision. God had to be behind baseball. Am I not right? Come on, Southbrook. Any baseball fans here with me today? Yeah, God had to be behind baseball, for sure. And no, that's not true. What we're gonna talk about today is the very first verse of our scriptures, the Hebrew scriptures, is in the very beginning, God said, let there be, and there was, time, space, and matter. And we're going to look at that today because those of us who are theists believe that that is true. Genesis, we're actually doing a series this summer on Genesis. Genesis' opening chapters are actually a poem. It's actually Hebrew poetry. So it's fascinating. It doesn't make it less true, but it is poetry. But it starts out with this, God said, and there was, ex nihilo, out of nothing. And so we're going to venture into this today. You need to get your thinking caps on. Shake the dust off your cobwebs this morning. If you need to, go out and caffeinate yourself and come back in, okay, with a legal stimulant. And because we're going to get into some pretty thick stuff, you're going to feel like you're gargling peanut butter here for a little bit, okay? Everybody ready for this? Now, our church will make no sense to you if you don't invest and invite. Because it is utterly built for people who aren't here. It's not built for you. It's so that you will experience that when you give it away is the only way you get it. And that is true when it comes to de-church skeptics, people who maybe had a faith experience but lost their faith. So this series is right at the core of why we are the way we are and do some of the zany things like puppies on the stage. That we do, it's just different, right? And there's method to our madness. But we also know this. There are probably a bunch of you who are listening to me right now, and you come every week, and you've been coming for years, probably with your spouse, probably with a spouse who is a very devout believer, and nobody knows it, but you don't believe. You don't believe in God. And nobody knows it but you. And we also are aware of that. And this series is for you too. All of you are going to experience crises in your life. And you're going to have your theology challenged. Especially the more you've put God into a box. And the more you've written a script for God, you're going to have that challenged. And you'll need this series. As we venture into the why of our faith, what is the reason for our faith? And so in this series, we're going to look next weekend at Doubting Thomas on Easter. And we're going to look at the benefit of science to faith. And we're going to look at the mirror of Christianity. We're going to look at the problem of evil and suffering. We're going to look at, is there an afterlife in the final week of this series? And on Saturday night of that week, as we celebrate, we're going to kind of turn this place into a mini heavenly party. And we're going to celebrate on Saturday night with baptisms. We invite you to invite other people. Take one of these pieces or five of these pieces as you go out today, or 10 of these, and say, you have got to come to my church if you have questions about faith. I'm going to recommend a couple of resources, and these I strongly recommend. One is Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case by Frank Turek. Tremendous resource for those of you who are struggling with faith to believe in God. Another one that is particularly written for Southbrook, because we have so many thousands of you who were at one time de-churched. This I couldn't recommend more highly. Finding God in the Waves, How I Lost My Faith and Found It Again Through Science by Mike McCargue. And he is known as Science Mike. He has a podcast that goes out weekly. Actually has a couple of them. And Mike grew up in a very strict fundamentalist theology. And when his parents divorced when he was young, parents who were very devout Christians, it totally, totally destroyed his faith. And that combined with he has a very scientific mind, he realized the literalism interpretation of some biblical passages that aren't meant to be taken literally just didn't mesh with science. It just didn't mesh with reality. And so he has written this, and for those of you who are coming back to faith, I couldn't recommend this more highly. Now, for those of you who have an orthodoxy with regards to God and the Bible, and nothing is true outside that orthodoxy, you won't like that book. You won't like that book. But for those of you who say, I need to understand Jesus and resurrection and miracles and church in a way that wasn't how I learned it growing up, then this book is for you. Okay? So I would recommend it heartily. He says some things in that book that are things that I've never heard said the way they were said. Scott Turek tells about the time that he was, speaking. And afterwards, he got a letter from a retired United States Marine who was distraught. And so, usually those things don't go together, right? A distraught U.S. Marine. So he knew that this is a Marine. This is not something lightweight that he's writing to me about. What this retired United States Marine was writing to him about was his daughter. His daughter had been a significantly impactful leader of her youth group in high school. She was known in her high school as an incredible Christian with tremendous impact. Everybody respected and loved her. She was so well accomplished that Christian organizations gave her scholarships that she could redeem at the college of her choice. And she chose the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill to attend there. And 4 weeks into her first semester at UNC Chapel Hill, she called her dad and she said, Dad, I have become an atheist. I no longer believe in God or my faith. And as you can imagine, this burly United States Marine was brought, he just came undone. He came undone. Now, his daughter is not the exception. She's actually closer to the norm. 75% of United States high schoolers will abandon their faith when they go off to college. And part of the reason is because, in her case it was true, her religion class is where she lost her faith. It was taught by an atheist. And she totally was deconstructed in her faith by her atheist professor. University professors are 5 times more likely to be atheists than the general public. Half of university professors have a low opinion of Christian students. And so what can happen in that context, as you can imagine, is a 19-year-old comes into that context with a faith that's been built on emotion, not anything rational or objective. And that atheistic, very bright professor slowly, rationally, reasonably deconstructs her emotional-based faith. And Frank Turek puts it well when he says this. He says, the problem is not that high schoolers are losing their faith mind when they go to college. The problem is they never brought a Christian mind to college. It never got there in the first place. And so, as with a lot of things around here, my intent also is with you high schoolers in mind. That it is time now in junior high and high school to build a faith that is rational and reasonable. And you realize you don't have to compromise your intellect to be a person of faith. As you will discover in this series with me and with Joe, it is actually a part of a strong faith. A very strong faith. So today we're going to start with what this series is built on is essentially three bases, okay? This series is built around three bases. This is the reason I'm going to speak out of why I believe in God, why I am a theist. And it's real simple. Nature, nurture, and Nazarene are three reasons that you have a reasonable faith. Now, this is first base, this is second base, this is third base to take you home plate of your beginnings and your endings. You see what I'm doing with this, friends, huh? You see I have baseball in my brain right now? Yeah, these are the base paths to a faith that says, here's where I came from and here's where I'm going. And I'll tell you what we're doing in our culture today is we're basically putting kids on the precipice of Niagara Falls and we're saying, hey, we don't know where you came from. And we don't know where you're going, but go ahead and cross Niagara Falls and enjoy the ride as much as you can. And the reason that this matters is because when you don't know where you came from, when you don't know where you're headed, you have no sense of identity. And so we're going to build today around this first one. The first reason that I believe in God is nature. This has been called the cosmological argument. Cosmos does not just mean Kramer. If you've never seen Seinfeld, how poor your life has been. Cosmo means the world, the universe, and logical. What's the logical reasoning behind the cosmos? What's the logical reasoning? It's the cosmological argument. What I want to talk to you about right now we're getting into the jar of peanut butter, is this idea of the law of causality. The law of causality. The law of causality says that behind every effect, there is a first cause. All of science is built on the law of causality. All science is. If we did not have a fundamental, predictable law of if there is an effect, there has to be a cause, we couldn't depend on any scientific deduction at all. There would be nothing that would make sense because something could appear from nothing and we would have no reason to base any deductive processes on. By the way, all of us, we use the law of causality 24/7. How many of you right now are terrified that a rhinoceros may have appeared out of nowhere in your living room and is at this moment rampaging through your house, causing great destruction to all your valuable? How many of you are afraid that that could happen? Because you know that things happen out of nothingness sometimes. I mean, nobody here is afraid of that. Even Jumanji says there was a cause behind that, right? That there was this crazy board game that caused that, right? We depend upon the law of causality. We don't even realize it. Our brains are wired to inhabit a universe of cause and effect. Okay? It's just we do it unconsciously. And so this universe is built around this understanding that if there was a beginning, there had to be something outside that reality that caused that to happen. If time, space, and matter at one point did not exist, what caused time, space, and matter to all of a sudden exist? It had to be something that is outside of time, space, and matter. It had to be something that's called non-contingent. All of that we have around us is contingent. We are all connected in with nature, when When you burn leaves in your yard, those leaves are just releasing the power of the sun. That's all it's doing. It's absorbed the power of the sun through photosynthesis. It's releasing the power of the sun. When you die, your atoms do not fail to exist. Matter is neither changes states, but is neither created nor destroyed. I mean, we're connected. What was outside that first caused that to happen? Because, look at this, even the most ardent scientist who does not believe in God today, there is no controversy that our universe had a beginning. That this something was nothing at one point. Stephen Hawking, who recently passed away, the most pronounced atheist and physicist of our time, said almost everyone now believes that the universe and time itself had a beginning at the Big Bang. And what was existent before the Big Bang wasn't something that we think was nothing. It was nothing, nothing. There was no thing. Zilch, zip, nada, zero. Anybody else have any other language they want to use here to communicate? There was nothing, no thing, no being, nothing. What caused that to happen? And the logical deduction is that something immaterial and really powerful had to cause that. An agency, not an impersonal force, because impersonal forces don't decide things. Agencies do. You are an agency, whether you realize it or not. You decide things. We had a mystery happen in our house yesterday. For months, my needle-nose pliers have been missing from my workbench. And yesterday, they magically appeared on my workbench. And I'm not going to incriminate my daughter-in-law by telling you she was the one who had stolen my needle-nose pliers, but she was sitting here last night, and I saw her slink in her seat because she knew she was the one who used my needle-nose pliers, but they all of a sudden showed up on my workbench. Now, I didn't say, wow, those are special needle-nose pliers. They have legs. They actually climbed up on there themselves. No, there was an outside cause that brought them to that point, right? We use that all the time. This makes sense that something outside those pliers, an agency, caused that to happen. Impersonal forces don't create things. Impersonal forces, like gravity, they simply repeat their duties so that what has been created is consistent. So have you noticed gravity? It's pretty consistent, isn't it? Except this. Have you noticed gravity is relative? It gets stronger as you get older. Have you noticed that? I see myself now. I was like, what's happening to my face? I don't jump like I used to. Gravity's getting stronger. It's an impersonal force. But it had to be an agency. It had to be immaterial. And I'll show you why in a minute. It had to be transcendent, non-contingent, timeless, spaceless. And when you talk about a timeless, spaceless, immaterial, all-powerful, personal force, who does that sound like? What does that sound like? It's church people. God is almost always the answer, okay? Jesus or God, okay? You can always just like, you never ask about Jesus or God. Yeah, you start saying, oh my gosh, that sounds a lot like, in the beginning, God. Here is just for those of you taking notes, which I would highly recommend today, nature, if nature had a beginning, then the cause cannot be something natural because nature did not exist. It has to be something outside of nature. Next statement. Nature was the effect. It can't be the cause. Therefore, look at this last one. The cause must be something beyond nature, which we define as supernatural. It is something non-contingent outside of nature because nature didn't exist. Nature could not have created nature. Now the question then becomes, is it safe to assume that it was God? That it was God, that it was something personal, an agency that decides things, not something impersonal that, like gravity, just does things. That it was something powerful, that it was something immaterial, and it's logical. It's logical to assume that. So look at this, look at this. There are two options you have when it comes to nature. One is, no one created something out of nothing. Nothing created something. Okay, that's one possibility. The second possibility is someone, an agency, created something out of nothing. Both of these are miracles. Both are miracles. But this is the miracle of nothing created something. This is the miracle of a designer designed something precise and precision ensued. Which one takes less faith? Which one takes less faith? To believe that something so complex, so precise, and I'll show you this in a minute, how unbelievably precise our universe is for your inhabitation, it came totally out of nothing. Again, even the most ardent scientist who does not believe in God will say the universe had a beginning. There was a point at which nothing existed, and then there was a point at which time, space, and matter were unleashed upon reality. So, you know, we get to this point, and many of us then start facing the real issue with this, and that is, do I want there to be a God? And this is the part you can't ignore. I want there to be a God. My mortgage payment next month depends on it. If someone proves today that there is no God, I'm going to become a golf pro teaching old ladies how to swing a golf club some dusty, dried out range somewhere. I will become Roy Ten Cup McAvoy. And we don't want that to happen, do we? Do you want that to happen? Do you want moral? No, you don't want that to happen. This is all about me, people. You don't want that to happen, right? Yeah, I want you to know this. I want there to be a God. There was a period in my life you don't know about. When I was in college, I did not want there to be a God. I did not want there. I was looking for reasons not to believe. And I understand what it is to be there. Maybe it's why I'm so passionate about reaching D-Church skeptics, because I was one. Well, Dr. William Lane Craig says this: if atheists are going to claim that things can pop into existence uncaused out of nothing, then why doesn't everything do so? Why don't iPads and Teslas and atheist books and pizzas pop into existence out of nothing? If you're hungry for a pizza right now, does it make more sense to order one or just wait and hope? And he's, I mean, William Lane Craig is just unbelievably brilliant when it comes to this stuff. But with tongue in cheek, he's right. Which takes more faith? Frank Turek talks about when he was speaking at university, he does a regular talk called "I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist." He speaks at universities. Maybe he spoke at yours. And he talked about this, and he does an open mic, and a guy named John, who had been a Christian, stepped up to the mic and he said, he became an atheist. This guy had been a Christian, became an atheist. And he stood up, John did, and he said to the mic, "We just need to give science more time. If we give science more time, science has so well described things that we used to attribute to the divine, and now we realize those are just effects of nature itself. If we just give science more time, we will come to discover that there is a rational reason to understand that something came out of nothing." And Frank Turek correctly responded by saying, "Well, John, you do understand that what you just described is faith. If we just have enough faith in science, it will reveal itself as the cause of nothing becoming something." And then he went on to say, he said, "John, which takes more faith, to believe that a non-contingent supernatural force created that which was nothing and made it something, and if we just give it time, We'll see that that happened. He said, John, how many of you right now are with your mom? This is going to get real weird here for just a second, okay? He said, John, I apologize. John, this would be like saying, if you give me enough time, I will prove that I gave birth to my mother. This is weird, isn't it? This is like getting a little weird in here. It's fundamentally, principally impossible to say that nature created nature because nature did not exist. Are you gargling peanut butter yet, friends? This is a lot of something that is going to lead somewhere, okay, in just a minute. Dr. Lawrence Krauss is now probably the most pronounced atheist physicist of our time because Stephen Hawking has passed away. He's a professor at the university, at Arizona State University. And he believes that as an atheist, he has solved the nothing into something conundrum that all atheists face. He admits, I cannot disprove God. And he describes himself not as an atheist, but as an anti-theist, which is even further on the scale of unbelief. He says he celebrates anti-theism in that by his estimation, there is zero evidence for God. Zero. But he admits, and I love this honesty, that I do not believe in God. I do not want there to be a God. And don't you love that honesty? I don't want there to be a God. Many of you have been there. I was. But he believes he has solved this puzzling question for atheism. If there's not a God, why is there something rather than nothing? And so in his book, A Universe from Nothing, Why There is Something Rather Than Nothing, he says the cause of the universe is not God, it is nothing. And he cites, happenings at the quantum level dispense with the need for God. The quantum level is the level that is subatomic. I mean, it is phenomenal, this world of the extremely small. He says, and I quote, one of the things about quantum mechanics is not only can nothing become something, nothing always becomes something, nothing is unstable, nothing will always produce something in quantum mechanics. Now, especially you students, whenever you hear something like that, always ask the person, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by, in this case, Dr. Krauss, what do you mean when you say nothing? Do you mean nothing or do you mean something? What do you mean? And Dr. Krauss's definition of nothing is actually something. It's actually something. It is not the nothing from which this universe originated. The something that he's talking about is a quantum vacuum in which particles go in and out of, pop in and out of existence, and we don't know what causes that yet. There are actually 10 different quantum level views of why these particles in the quantum vacuum pop in and out of existence, but they are not nothing. They are something. They're actually the same particles that make up you and make up me. So the nothing that he uses in his title does not mean nothing. It means something. Now, I want to be very clear on this. If Dr. Lawrence Krauss were standing up here right now and I said, Dr. Krauss, you have the platform, he would say things that would make me look like this, okay? All right, I mean, he would say things so I'd be just hairy, you know? I'd be dumb and dumber and dumbest. I mean, I get that. But you could be a master house builder, and if you build your house on a flawed foundation, it doesn't matter how good you are as a house builder. And if, all science, all of life is philosophy. You cannot escape philosophy. To deny philosophy is to deny logic, and the only way you can deny logic is to use logic. This is crazy. Like, if you say to me, there is no absolute standard of good and evil, there is no absolute standard of morality, you're making a statement of absolute standard of morality to say that. You can't escape it. And so when he says that, his logic is flawed. He is assuming, he's doing what's called in logic equivocation. Equivocation is when in an argument you use one word to define two different things. This is what your spouse does to you every time you argue with each other, okay? Wait a minute. What do you mean by that? And when he says nothing, he's actually saying something. It's not nothing. And he even admits that the title of his book, The Universe That Came From Nothing, actually isn't nothing. I think it's important to know that I want there to be a God. And it's important to know that Dr. Krauss does not want there to be a God. And this is the question. Do you want to believe? It really does come down to that. Because if you don't want to be, if you don't want a God, and obviously what's assumed behind a God is accountability, you'll find reasons not to believe in God. But if you want there to be a God, you'll find reasons to solidly base your faith in intellect, in deductive law of causality reasoning. Dr. Paul Davies is a professor at the University of Arizona. He is an agnostic. He is an accomplished physicist. But a while back, he dared to ask these questions. Questions that brought him vitriol from his scientific community. In an article in the New York Times titled "Taking Science on Faith," he began to ask questions like, "Why are there physical laws at all? Why is there a law of causality? Why are the laws of nature so uniform, precise, and predictable? Why do mathematics so accurately describe reality? Why is the universe so orderly?" Look at this on the screen. In that article, he wrote, "All science proceeds on the assumption that nature is ordered in a rational and intelligible way. You couldn't be a scientist if you thought the universe was a meaningless jumble of odds and ends haphazardly juxtaposed. Scientists take the orderly laws of physics on faith. And those laws are expressed as tidy mathematical relationships." He goes on to say he believes it is anti-rational, and it makes a mockery of science to say that this orderly world in which we live has zero reasonableness about it. He writes, "Can the mighty edifice of physical order we perceive in the world about us ultimately be rooted in reasonless absurdity? If so, then nature is a fiendishly clever bit of trickery, meaninglessness and absurdity somehow masquerading as ingenious order and rationality." This is an agnostic saying, science is based on faith. Is it rational to assume that something unbelievably precise, it's so precise we have to adjust our clocks to this universe's rotation around the sun or this planet? I mean, it's just unbelievable that it came about from a lack of reason or order or precision of an intelligent mind. Nature tells us there is a nature maker, and that nature maker is personal. The universe is fine-tuned for your inhabitation. Stephen Hawking, listen to this, an atheist himself, said that if the expansion rate of the universe, listen to this, if the expansion rate of the universe was off one part in 100,000 million million 1 second after the Big Bang, the sun would not exist. The universe would have collapsed upon its own weight and we would not be here. If in just one part, 1 second, in 100,000 million million parts, the universe were off, it would have been a collapse of space and matter, and it would not have existed. That precision came by chance? He said this, "If the gravitational force of a life-bearing universe were different by one part in 10 to the 40th power," that's one with 40 zeros behind it, okay? One part in 10 to the 40th power, almost an incomprehensible number. It actually is an incomprehensible number. "If the gravitational force of this life-bearing universe were off by that much, we would not exist. The sun would not exist. We would not exist." And you know what that is? That it's the equivalent of, what's 1 in 10 to the 40th power? If the universe and its gravitational pull were off the equivalent of 1 inch in the span of the scale of our whole universe, we would not exist. You have three options. It was physical necessity that had to be that way. That gets eliminated because it wasn't physical necessity that had to be that way. It was chance, or there was an outside agent who said, let there be energy. Let there be time and space and matter, and a big bang happened. And there was the heavens and the earth and baseball fields. Right? Werner Heisenberg, the physicist and the quantum mechanics originator, really, of quantum thought, many attribute to his paper, said the first gulp from the glass of natural sciences would turn you into an atheist. But at the bottom of the glass, God is waiting for you. God is waiting for you. The psalmist said it this way: the heavens declare the glory of God, the skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they reveal knowledge. Do you want there to be a God? Because you will find him when you seek him with all your heart. You say, what's one thing I can do today? What's one takeaway, something I can do today that helps me on this journey? And I will tell you right now, there is something you can do. If you do this 10 minutes, what I'm about to show you, for 6 weeks, atheists have said they felt a connection to God when they did this for 10 minutes for 6 weeks. Let me show you. Here it is. Get on your knees. In 10 minutes every day, say, God is love. God is love. Because what this God did is he created parts of your brain that if for 10 minutes every day for 6 weeks you say, God is love, your brain in 10 minutes literally begins to change. Literally begins creating a God network. It's amazing. That if you seek him, even before you believe, you will find him. And faith is not what happens when you get all your questions answered and then you start praying. Faith is what happens when you start praying before you have all the answers. And you say, God, I want you to be there. I want you to be there. I've never known someone who thinks of God as a loving God be an atheist. It's always God as an angry, vengeful God. My dad was abusive. My religious system was condemning. But I've never met someone that said, I think there's a loving God out there, but I don't believe he exists. I don't want him to be there. Who was an atheist? Let's pray. Let's do it right now. Father, the Father who is beyond our comprehension, Jesus gave us a framework to identify with you by saying he is like an Abba. He's like a daddy. There are many of us in this room right now who are so angry with you. That even our anger is faith. And I pray that what this series does is leads us all to our knees. And we say with Job, though you slay me, yet will I trust in you and believe in you. I will seek you out in brutal honesty, embracing intellect and everything, And what we now know is you have provided a way for those God connections to happen in our being. May it be so, because that would be a really good thing. It is proven that even atheists benefit from prayer. And all of us, myself included, who still have the seeds of atheism that want to grow, may we get on our knees, even before we believe. Thank you, the Nazarene King. And next week, we get to talk about how atoms rearranged inside of wounds that had been made by rusty nails, and life found a way. Amen? Amen. We'll see you next week, everybody, for Easter.